If a company isn't telling their story and it's not appropriately displayed for people to absorb, it's 2018, and I think people don't realize how powerful storytelling actually is. Mm-hmm. And so when you can literally take a company that isn't really sexy, quote unquote, but make their story the focal point and sort of what their service or product actually is, then you'll win. And that's why I always tell people, just lead with your story, lead with authenticity, and people will come and the money will be there. And that's sort of what I focus on now with people.
Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I'm so glad to have you with me here on this voice journey. Thank you for your downloads and your shares and being a subscriber. And thank you to those of you who have taken a moment to leave me a review on iTunes. I love reading those on the air. And if any of you would be willing, I'd love it if you would just take a couple of minutes and head over to iTunes and leave me an honest review. They really help me in the search rankings with the show here, and would love to give you a shout out and read your review on the air. Now, I've been answering a lot of questions, people sending in questions. If you have a question, send it to Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, at CaptivateTheRoom.com. Loving reading them, doing shows on them. But today I've got a really great guest. I know you're going to love hearing from him. With me on the show today is Mike Cassavant, and he's a sales and marketing strategist whose focus as your most trusted advisor is to have a definitive understanding of every one of your unique dynamics to uncover your potential to reinvent yourself no matter the challenge. Now, in Mike's spare time, he can be found working on a collection of poetry that challenges the human condition, building relationships across many sectors, connecting like-minded individuals to enhance their given profession, expanding his knowledge in various areas such as digital psychology, self-development, and business economics. Mike's got a really wonderful story and a very unique background. And I think you're going to really get a lot from our conversation here. So let's head on over to the show. Welcome to the show, Mike. I'm so glad you're with me today.
Thank you for having me, Tracy. I truly appreciate it. It's very nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's so nice to meet you. I have to tell the listeners, Mike is just a surprise to me. I met him on LinkedIn, well, just now meeting him, but met him on LinkedIn. And love what he's doing on LinkedIn. And we're going to talk a lot about the stories that I've heard him tell. But that's where we met. And here we are. I just, after I heard so much of your stuff, I said, I got to ask Mike to come on the show. So, go ahead.
I would say, no, it's an absolute honor to be on the show with you. I'm always very humbled when people reach out to talk about something I've posted that resonated with them and, you know, ask to interview me or jump on a podcast. It never really gets old. I'm always like, wow, you really want to talk to me? That's so crazy. I'm still always shocked. So I appreciate it being on the show.
Oh, well, it's great to have you. You have such a great energy about you. You are so positive.
Thank you.
Now, is that just who you are?
So let's see, how can I even answer this question? So believe it or not, actually, I spent the majority of my life very depressed and very sad and very angry, in all honesty. And so I think at one point, something turned in me where it was like looking at everything as a negative, like, because I was attracting so much. And I started to read, I'm a huge reader, so I started to read a lot of books and different things about the mind and how powerful it was and sort of what you put out to the world, you'll attract tenfold. And something snapped in me where it was like, Mike, stop being so negative. Mike, stop, you know, being such a Debbie Downer, so to speak. And I remember I just kind of woke up one day and realized like that's not who I wanted to be. And I sort of quadrupled down on living more of a positive sort of mindset life. And it's funny because when people sort of learn more about my history and know that I was a musician and professional musician touring the world, when they look at my band and hear the music, they're like, oh my God, that's insane. Like, how is that you? Because it's part of my makeup, right? Because it's a very aggressive, heavy music. But in retrospect, it actually made me here and positive, because it was that sort of, you know, everyone has their things in life. Everyone has frustrations and aggravations and different things that bother them. But so with music and writing, I found that I could take all of that pent up aggression and release it in such a positive way. So I think because I always had that creative release, it put me in this wonderful place as a person, just be in a good mood, like pretty much all the time. And that's kind of, I think, probably where it stemmed from.
Yeah. And have you seen a difference in your life since you started shifted from negative to positive?
As far as what?
As far as, like, you mentioned that they say you draw in tenfold. Are you, do you find that you're drawing in more positive experiences and people?
Sure. I mean, I think like anything, you have to sort of, I used to always wear my heart in my sleeve, and I still feel like I'm a pretty much an open book, but I think I've burned enough times. You start to realize that you have to kind of, you can be an open book, you can be a great person, but you have to sort of figure out, like, who am I going to let in my life? And so growing up just outside of Boston, I grew up in an area called Newton, Massachusetts. And, it's funny because a lot of my inner city friends that were from Boston proper, they used to tell me all the time, like, yeah, man, like, we were raised to keep everyone five arm lengths away. Mm-hmm. And so meaning like they don't trust anybody. And so I sort of couldn't really understand that until years later, because I think at some point I, you know, you sort of had to figure out, like, who can I genuinely like talk to, and who can I generally open up to about a lot of things personally, and who are someone that I might have to be a little bit more weary of. And so I think for me, I've attracted a lot of great people because of that mindset shift. And I think because I'm a lot more aware and a lot more in tune to myself, I know, like, believe it or not, Tracy, I'm actually extremely introverted, and most people don't believe that because I'm very outgoing. I'm a very outgoing person. I always say I'm introverted with massive extroverted tendencies. So here's a prime example. After a concert, when I used to play shows, I'd be, you know, there'd be hundreds of kids or 1,000 kids, whatever, going crazy and all around me. And after the show, I had to go out to the back and literally sit by myself for like half hour just to decompress, because so much stimulus had happened. And I noticed that too now, like even on my trip home from Boston last weekend, just being in a plane, being surrounded by so many people, I kind of got in the car going back to Milwaukee, and I was just like, oh my God, I just need like 2 hours to just lay in my bed in complete silence and just be okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think being around so many different types of personalities, it wears on me. So after certain points in my days, I have to sort of like, kind of just resort back to just being by myself with a book or a pen and just sort of veg out for about an hour, then I'm usually good.
Yeah. That's my son. He has to, I mean, just even being in school all day, he wants to come home and just draw and be just like, he has to have that time. So yeah. That's fascinating. And now we talked about this before we started recording, and I want to talk about it because I think it's so powerful. I really pulled all my questions from so many of the beautiful things that I've seen you post.
Thank you.
You posted something, and we were talking about it, about when you were young, little, you were basically, they basically said you had a disability. I'm going to let you tell the story, but that's basically the gist of it, what they said. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, part of that post was talking about sort of a time when, you know, as a little adolescent kid, I was in this medical facility and with these doctors with piles of ink blots and all these different weird games to sort of challenge me to figure out how smart or not smart that I was. And so I was never a good test taker. It was like, even to this day, on paper, you think I'm a terrible student, but in actuality, like, it's just the way things appear to me, where I could see something, I could hear a question, but if you explain it to me, I can give you the exact answer. But on paper, if it's worded a certain way, I'll be like, I have no idea what that means. And even though I do. So sitting in that room, I just remember feeling like exceptionally insecure. I had, you know, this person that's like sitting there with a notepad, and writing down everything that would happen with me or everything that was going on and all the questions that they were asking and sort of saying mm-hmms and like, oh yeah, wow, ooh, okay, interesting. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, what can I say? I'm not sure. I'm very, you know, unclear. And then after we did all these like hours upon hours of testing, they came back to my mom and I was sitting there in the chair listening and they're just like, well, your son has a disability. He has all these issues. They were fearful that like I was going to hurt myself or hurt other people. And my mom was just like, are you out of your mind? Like, what is wrong with you? So I just remember in what you and I talked about earlier, I remember hearing that tag of being disabled. Yeah. And I thought to myself, am I handicapped? Like, do I have, and like, am I like, you know, I couldn't register with it because, you know, my mind has always been exceptionally creative and, you know, put me in a creative environment and I started to see I would excel everybody in the class, but yet, you know, put me in a class but with, you know, math or something, and I'd be like sweating and crying. Right, like, what is this? What's happening? Right. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, my whole adolescent life for up until I was about 13 or so, I always felt like that I was completely disabled. I sort of took that on and was sort of wearing it throughout my life. And so every time it was like, well, why does Michael do this? Oh, I have a disability. Oh, I have to be in a special class.
Wow.
Oh, I have to do this. So it kind of became my story, right? And I think at some point when I first discovered music, I remember that was the first time I felt so empowered and felt so confident, because even though it was very new to me, playing guitar wise, I just remember hearing these notes that I heard on a radio that from a song, and I figured them out within seconds. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, like, how do I know how to do that? Like, that's interesting to me. And so once I started really diving into music, I had written my first song and it was like this total cheesy, you know, dumb adolescent song. But I remember one of my friends came over to my parents' house and said, man, like, what are you playing? What is that? And I said, oh, it's a song I wrote. And they were, the reaction was like, his eyes were like super wide and was just like, whoa, you wrote that? And I felt like, oh my God, like, this is my thing. Like, you know, this is what makes me smart, right? And so I think that was the day I stopped ever saying that I was disabled. That was the day I just remember thinking that my mind is very powerful. And I said, you know, I don't care what kids or what teachers ever say to me going forward. Like, I have this thing that I can do better than a lot of people, and I'm going to go all in with that. And I did. I found this whole new world that I could explain myself through notes and words without ever having to say anything. And it became this wonderful place for me to kind of always know I could resort to whenever I felt like life was sort of dumping on me in some form of way. And yeah, and I look back in those early years as a kid, just thinking about, you know, the trials and tribulations I had to go through, feeling like I was such a, you know, delinquent in so many ways. And yet all these years later, the things that these doctors said were not right and not good became my biggest asset, from, you know, music and writing to business now. So it's, yeah, I'm very blessed to have the mind I do, and I would never do anything to jeopardize it.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. That's really how you found your voice, that music and writing. And I love another piece that you said to me before we jumped on to record, because I was this way with my son. You said your mom wanted you to have that creativity and wanted you to express yourself. And so she never put you on medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what happened to the people that were? Tell us that.
So that was, so my mom was adamant. She was just like, my son's hyperactive. He has a creative mind. He can't sit still. So she got me into athletics and sports, which I excelled at very quickly. It's funny. And to this day, you can give me a sport that I've never played before. Anything like where I can just visually see it and hold it, and I'll usually become pretty good at it very fast. But she had decided that there was no reason or way that she was going to put me on drugs. And all my friends growing up that started to go on Ritalin and go on Adderall years later became just horrible drug addicts and fell into heroin and Percocets and oxycodone. I just remember feeling like everyone's so focused on alcohol and marijuana as these gateways to all these horrible things. And yet this over-the-counter drug is destroying people's lives.
Yeah.
And so I saw it happen. I saw literally friends of mine breaking up their Adderall, sniffing it. And that was like their rush. And then that from there went to cocaine. Then from there went to heroin. And then from there, got, they're in mental institutions of them. I mean, it's insane. So I found that I was so fortunate to never get on that. And to this day, I'm very much against, in most cases, any type of drug that's going to sort of minimize who you are as a person, mm-hmm. just to achieve what? Focus and, you know, attention? Who cares?
it's about achieving fitting in. Isn't right. It's about making the cookie cutter so that we can all take the standardized test. Sorry, exactly. But that's the truth. Right. Well,
and it's funny that you said that it becomes to sort of mold you to be okay. And so to me, Ritalin and Adderall, they wanted to mold you to be what they want you to be, right?
Yes.
And so I think for me, there's actually a quote that I came up with that I'm working on as one of my books that I'm writing this year. It's called The Label That Couldn't Be Identified. And that's me to a T. So everyone, and to this day, people want to label you, whether it's music or whether it's, Mike's this. I'm like, no, I'm not just that though. I'm so many other things. So I never wanted, even as a musician, touring the world, playing shows all over the world, I never identify with just being a musician. I was always into business. I was always into all these other things. So I was like, well, no, this is part of who I am. It's a piece, but here's this whole other plethora of things that I do. So I think that was always something I said, it made the most sense to me that I hate labels.
Yeah. Now, I think this was your post. Did you post something about you were on the football team and you quit the football? You were popular. You were successful. Everybody loved you. You quit the football team and nobody would talk to you.
Yeah.
I thought that was you. That is powerful. I want to talk about that.
Sure. That was my, freshman, sophomore, junior year in high school, I played football and I was a really, really aggressive player. I was very good. I started playing varsity. Actually, I remember this. I went to my freshman football season or my freshman football summer just to start the season. And I practiced with the guys for about an hour. And then the varsity football coach ran over and said, Mike, you're practicing with us today. And I was like, with the varsity team? Are you serious? Okay. So then I went over, I'm going to stand on the sidelines and just watch. And they threw me right into the first offensive line. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm playing now. And I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah. And so right from the jump, they were like, all right, you're starting defensive tackle and you're starting offensive tackle. I'm like completely out of shape. I hadn't really this is my ninth grade season. I had no idea what I was doing. I was terrible that season. I mean, I think in retrospect, I probably played okay. But after that season, I remember I went into the gym and I just started training like crazy. And by sophomore year, I was a completely different person. People would try to double team me, triple team me. I'd split it. I'd sack the quarterback. I mean, I was a complete freak on the field. And then by junior year, I was getting bags upon bags of college letters from just all colleges around the world, D1, D2, etc., that wanted me to play. And I remember visiting the schools. I remember going there. And I was like, wow, this is actually want me to come play here. And then something I remember right around junior year is when I really started taking music 100% seriously. I was just sitting there one day and I was like, if I break my leg, these people won't care about me at all. I'm just nothing to them. I'm just I'm literally just a piece of meat that can hit people and I'm really good. So when I got back home, I remember I sat down in my room and I said, you know what, man, music's my passion. Music is who I am. This is what I love. Football, I think if I actually had the same passion that I did with music, I probably would have went very far with it. So I decided that going into my senior year, I went back to school. I went to summer sessions and I went to my coach and my defensive coordinator. And I said, guys, listen, I love you. I really do. But I cannot play this year. I'm done. I have to focus on music. And I was doing it out of a place where I broke my hand and I couldn't play. It would have been devastated or something. I started thinking about that because the way I played as a player, I was not gentle by any stretch.
Yeah.
And so when I quit, I remember I felt really good about myself. I felt like, wow, I made the right decision. I felt empowered. And then the first day of school, I remember walking down the hall and it was like a ghost town for me. And it was just like, I was saying hi to friends that I've grown up with and known my whole life that all of a sudden stopped talking to me. And it was the weirdest thing. And I just remember after the first day, I'm like, wow, this is going to be a really long year for me. This is going to suck. And so even down to teachers that were literally giving me terrible grades because my football coach was an English teacher at our school. And so from you know, the politics of high school and being a football player, that I let the school down, I let him down, and let recruiters down. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but guys, like, you're all forgetting that, like, I made this decision for myself. Like, I didn't do it to be a jerk to you. I did it because I wouldn't have been the same player anymore. Cause I, my passion, I lost it. The fire to go out in the field and put in as much time as I did the years prior, I completely lost it. And so that whole year was exceptionally challenging for me because, you know, I fell into this really dark, deep depression, and I felt like, wow, like, I thought I did something so powerful for myself, and then I had all this rejection come from it. So then I started, like, second guessing myself, like, wow, am I not worth this? Am I making the right decision? Should I be doing this? Because this is how people are treating me. And I remember I had this teacher, Mr. Gregory. I'll never forget this guy till the day I die. He was an extra help teacher. So I used to go to classes just to, you know, have them help me with my homework. He was actually one of the first people to recognize that I had a really good talent for writing and utilizing words and verbiage that most people wouldn't necessarily use. And I remember he was helping me with this one paper, and the revisions he had me do every day. I mean, it was like weeks upon weeks. And I remember finally finishing it and going, wow, this is a really great paper. He was so proud of me. He's like, Mike, this is an A all day. Like, we corrected everything, no run-on sentences. Everything was perfect. And I went to my teacher, put it in. And then about a week later, we got it back, and I had a D minus. And he had all these red marks on it. And, you know, saying all this stuff that basically he made up that wasn't true. So I brought it into my Mr. Gregory, and he said, Mike, you know, what'd you get in the paper? And I was like, a D minus. He's like, shut the hell up. What'd you get? I'm like, no, I'm serious. And then that's when I actually told him finally, like, what was going on at school for me. All these students basically just, you know, I wouldn't say bullying, but definitely like treating me like I was nothing. And he basically marched down to that teacher and, put him in place, and he said he would have reported him if he didn't change that grade. And of course I got an A, thankfully. But it was more the principle of it. And that's when right around that time, I remember still, I'm like, wow, like, people hate me. Like, I can't believe this. Yeah. Like, I made the right decision for myself. And that's when I felt like, you know, every day thereafter, I would have my headphones on and I like walk through the hallways. I have my band and I was very happy with that. But like, I was always by myself. You know what I mean? It was a huge school. So lunchtime typically was the worst because I hated sitting with people. So I was able to leave and kind of go by this one tree and sit underneath it with my notebook and my headphones. And I started to realize like that was my happy place. You know, I could sit with this notebook. And if I didn't have my notebook and my pen and my guitar, I know for a fact I would have dropped out. I know that for sure. And I know I would have let these ridiculous human beings win that treated me so poorly. But when I look back at it now, I'm actually so grateful it happened for me because number one, I realized who my true friends were, right? I realized the type of people I want in my life and the type of people I don't. So if I'm only good to someone because of something I can do and something physically, I can play music great or I can play football great. But if they're only in my life for that one thing, I don't want them in my life. You know what I mean? Because that's only a piece. Mm-hmm. And so I think that opened my eyes to stop trying to fit in with people that clearly didn't like me for me. And that's when I found my passion for music and really pursuing that as a career. And all my music friends to this day are still some of my best friends. They're the most wonderful people on the planet.
Yeah, definitely that silver lining. But I can't imagine what it must have been like to be a senior in that high school going through that. That's tough.
Yeah, you know, and we had I think we graduated with like 1,000 kids. It was a huge school. Yeah. It was, I mean, high school is hard in general.
You right, know
I mean?
Like, exactly.
Let's be real, it's awful. And I think that's why I'm very, very focused over the next couple of years to give back. Like, I'm a huge person. Like, I want to be able to go back to high school, especially high school, because it's such a horrible 4 years for kids, especially now with social media and the online cyberbullying and just bullying in general. That's something I really hold near and dear to my heart. I think self-empowerment and self-awareness is so important, especially at a young age. And, you know, I want to be able to help kids realize that it's okay to be weird. It's okay to be different. And those are the people that end up changing the world. And the people that don't, they go through life and that are bullying people, they're kind of the ones that miss out on what life's all about. And so I very much plan on doing something where it's more of a speaking engagement with a lot of very interesting people and musicians to be able to come with me to different schools to talk about our experiences and, you know, and have them relatable, where it's not someone standing in a suit and tie that's going to tell me about being bullied. It's like, I want someone that's got tattoos and, you know, that's kind of that understands these kids on a youthful level. And I think that's going to be very powerful.
I think that is wonderful. That's phenomenal. What is it that you do? What is your business now?
Yeah, so I'm a consultant and advisor without question. And that's kind of where I like to be. So for example, there's a client that I just started working with that they're going through this sort of transitional period and they're trying to identify new ways to sort of attract a younger audience. I've started to look at what they're doing and where they can take things. And so I'm sort of a problem identifier, if you will, and I'm able to kind of dissect someone's business model very quickly and identify areas that they're either not implementing or areas that they can improve upon. And so typically for me, I'll help them structure a social media strategy to start to, you know, tell their story appropriately and learn more about them and kind of learn their whys. Because the funny thing is, especially when you get into corporations that are 10 to 20, 30 years old, they have incredible stories to tell, especially from, you know, just kind of being in the trenches and starting from ground zero, what they had to do to get to be a billion-dollar organization. And I sit down and I'm going, well, right, but I want to know all of the dirt. Like, tell me, like, when you were homeless trying to build this business, like, tell me those stories. So now we can formulate some great content to tell your story, to resonate with people, to sort of gain new trust and gain new awareness. Because I think, if a company isn't telling their story and it's not appropriately displayed for people to absorb, I mean, it's 2018 and I think people don't realize how powerful storytelling actually is. Mm-hmm. And so when you can literally take a company that isn't really sexy, quote unquote, but make their story the focal point and the sort of what their service or product actually is, then you'll win. And that's why I always tell people, like, just lead with your story, lead with authenticity, and people will come and the money will be there. And that's sort of what I focus on now with people.
Yeah. That's really cool. So you work with individuals, companies.
Yep.
All the time. Because I saw another post of yours that I love so much. So I knew you worked with individuals, but I wasn't exactly sure. And I knew it was something to do with storytelling. Uh-huh. But you were on a rampage. You were on a rampage about people not charging their work.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, you know what it was, Tracy? That particular week, I had like five or six, no, actually more than that. I think like eight phone calls with either clients or past clients or friends that were telling me like what they were charging for their service. And I was just like, are you insane? What is wrong with you guys? Like, So I was so fired up because at one point I had a fitness business and that was actually right out of music. My music career, I started a fitness business. And I remember I would do favors for people. I would constantly like, you know, here's my rate. Oh, it's a little expensive. And I'd be like, oh, well, you know, what do you want to charge me? And so I do all this like legwork and running around to sort of appeal to a demographic that I shouldn't have been trying to appeal to. And so I finally reached this point where I realized my worth. I realized what my knowledge can do to someone else, because I was doing a lot of that for free in a lot of ways in the early days. And I look back and now and I'm like, oh my God, I love to help people regardless, very selfless. I'm a very selfless person. But when it comes to, you know, your business or work, I feel like I have a saying where I don't look at a phone consult or a sales call a sale ever. I just do not. To me, it's never about that. It's me educating a person or actually having them educate me on what their issues are. And I ask a lot of questions. I try to really dive deep and figure out, is this a person that I can help on a massive level? And is this someone that I actually want to work with? Mm-hmm. Those are two things that people forget. Like, you don't have to say yes to every person that you talk to. Mm-hmm. And I think the power of saying no to someone because you feel that they're going to be, I wouldn't say saying they're a problem isn't the right word, but knowing that you have the power to say, you know what, this is not going to be a good person to have on my schedule because of certain reasons. And that's okay to do that. But to sort of bend over backwards for people, to sort of go to this level of, I'm going to discount my entire service for this one person just to, I think is asinine, because why would you do that for them and not do it for another client that's paying you your top rate and you're still giving them the same service? It doesn't make sense to me. So I think for me, I'm always telling people to own what your worth is. And if you don't, and you value yourself too low, people won't respect you. I've tested this 1,000 times over. I remember when I started my fitness business, my rates were so low and people were like, really? Like, that's all you're charging? And then when I raised them through the roof, I lost a ton of people, but I gained a core audience. And I was like, this is what I'm talking about. And the results, like, I guess the other thing too, I always say is, if you charge, you know, a higher price for your service, the person that's now investing in you, typically because of that reason, they're invested like mentally, physically, yeah, emotionally. Whereas if you're charging $10,000 for a service a month, yet you discount it to $2,000, that person's not going to be quite there. They're just not. And mm-hmm. I've seen that time and time again. Anyone that has come in and pay you 100% what you want and what your service actually is, they get the best results because they're fully there. They're like, whatever you need, Mike, let's do it. Where are we going to go with this? How far do you need me to do? Like, where can I go? And so I think anyone that discounts their service is putting themselves in a really bad rut. In the very beginning stages, I understand. But once you start to kind of build your name, build your following, you have to own what you're going to charge. And you're going to lose a lot of people, or you'll say no a lot more. But the people that do come in and pay you what you're worth, you feel empowered and you feel better about yourself. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, you know? It's so true. It's just like, you know, there's a saying, and it is so true. You cut a deal for somebody, they're the one that's going to make your life.
It's miserable. It's true, Tracy. It's always the people. I talk about this one for some reason, but there was one guy I trained and he was just fighting me on my price points back like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I just said like, fine, I'll do it. And then about 2 months later, he's like, you know, I really don't want to do hour sessions. Let's just do half hours. And he's like, let's drop that down to like he was dictating everything to me. Mm. I remember when he got to that point after 2 months, I just said, you know what? I'm good. I don't want to train you anymore. This is not like I've already buckled like so much for you. And every time it comes to like, you know, the end of the month, you're like, well, I missed 3 sessions. So why can't you just credit that to me for next month? And it's like, I'm sorry, man, it doesn't work that way. If you miss them, it's your own accord. Like if you get here, great. If you don't, you know, my legalities of the process. And there was always the people that I did buckle for that were the biggest pains in my butt. So,
yeah.
Oh, it was awful.
I think you make such a good point about investment. I love the example of the $10,000 and all, but I'll do it for $2,000, because that at the end of the day is what it's about. It's about investing in myself. Am I worth $10,000?
Correct.
Yep. Right? Isn't that right? Isn't that the whole issue?
1,000%, Tracy. And I think that the person, so we as people, right? Money is odd. We have this very weird, anytime dollars are thrown around, people get weird. And some people get weirder than others. And I don't know why that is. I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot of people that are scared of success. Mm-hmm. I think people don't want the perception that like, oh, they're making money. But it's like, isn't that the whole point to live? It's like, you know, do something that you absolutely love, find a way to sustainably live. If you go past, you know, that threshold of whatever it is that you're trying to, you know, achieve in life, why is that a problem? Like it should never be. And I think there's even conversations I've had with people over the last couple of weeks about their moral compass and making too much money. And I'm sitting back and I'm going, well, if your whole sort of sole purpose is to help, you know, build like a nonprofit to help, you know, raise water or have better, cleaner water in Africa. Like, I'm all about that. Like, go for it. But like, don't shortchange yourself in thinking that the more money you make, the more evil you are. It's the person, and money won't dictate that ever. It's only going to amplify who you actually are. So if you're a negative person and you're sort of doing things with the wrong intentions, money's only going to amplify that to be a worse human being. So that's really, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's such a good point. And it is, money's so funny. There are so many hangups about money, so many beliefs about money. And, you know, you mentioned fear of success, there's fear of failure. And it took me forever to figure out what my hangup was. And you know what it was? Fear of disappointment.
So fear of disappointing yourself or fear of disappointing the person?
Both.
Interesting.
Yeah, because there had been so much disappointment in my life. And you don't know much about my story. Yeah. But I was raised in a family where I wasn't allowed to speak. And so, wow. Yeah, there was just massive disappointment. It took me forever to unpack that, but it was, well, I don't want to be disappointed. I finally can grab my worth, and this is what my transformation is worth, but golly, I can't bear the feeling of disappointment. And then if I charge them, what if they're disappointed in me?
Ah, interesting. You know, it's funny, Tracy. I always hear people talk about fearing success or fearing certain things, but you're like, the disappointment, I don't think I've actually ever heard that before. That's really an interesting angle.
Yeah. Well, that's why it took me forever to figure it out, because I'm sure there was fear of success and fear of failure and all these other ones, because I'm a lifelong learner. I'm like you. I'm a reader. I dig, because I want to be the best version of me I can be. Yeah. And when I stumbled onto this disappointment, that I had been disappointed so many times in my life that I couldn't bear disappointment.
You know, I can relate to that so much, because when I look at rejection and I go back to like my earliest remembrance of it and how that's sort of been the case in my life with so much of it. I mean, I could write a book of just rejection, literally. I mean, some of the stuff that I've gone through in my life, it's laughable to me now, but like when I really dive into a lot of my past with rejection, it's like the amount is ridiculous. And so I think that's why I always had this sort of warped self-image where I just never felt worthy. I always felt like a third wheel. I always felt like I was searching for love in the wrong places, whether it was a female or a male. And I always wanted sort of like attention, so to speak, that I sort of trail back to things of my father and I, or where I maybe when I was younger, I didn't have that sort of affection that I needed at sort of stages in your life when you're growing up that you sort of need a father figure. Even into my early 20s, I think there was still issues with it. Then right around probably 25, I just remember I was like, nope, this is not happening. I'm not letting people treat me this way anymore. And, you know, after that, it was kind of like everything else has been pretty on the level for me.
Yeah. And I think that's so great. And I feel like almost on some levels, that's almost the minority, the people that can discern their worth, because I think there's so many people trucking around with low self-worth.
Oh God. It's
right.
I think, oh God, self-esteem is a real issue. Self-worth is a real issue. Depression is a real issue. Like, these things are not something that you can just brush under the rug and hope they go away. There's a chemical imbalance with people that, you know, so for example, like depression's always been something in my life since I was really little, and death has unfortunately been, I've been surrounded by it since I was a kid. And that was the first, when my great grandmother passed away, I was about 3 years old, and I'm three. I'm like, well, I don't know. I shouldn't be depressed at 3 years old. Yeah. And I remember my great grandma passed away, and my mom used to tell me stories. She was like, Michael, you would be like curled in a ball in the corner of your room, just crying like nonstop. And I'd be like, Michael, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I just keep talking about great grammy. And she was like, oh my God, like we need to figure this out. So at that early age, I remember I was just like, was very sensitive to certain things or loss and all these. I think honestly, at 34 years old, I've buried over 45 people.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like friends to family members. It's a lot. And so many people have died around me that were close to me or that I knew really well. And yeah, it's just really interesting to kind of look back on that, because I think it was always something that sort of I carried. And, you know, the depression for me, if I allow, even to this day, like it's still an issue in a lot of ways. If I allow it to take over my life, it will absolutely destroy me. So I think, you know, it's something that for me, there's always going to be this underlying sadness in my life. And I actually appreciate that, because it's what makes me creative and really pulls those heartstrings and that emotional attachment to words that I want to, you know, paint a visual picture of when I'm writing poetry and really focus on. I always talk about this, where I'm not really influenced by writers. Writers don't influence me whatsoever. When I hear music and it hits me, and you hear that like beautiful chorus that you're just like, oh my God, this is so good. Or, you know, for me with heavy metal, there's usually parts where I'm just like, oh my God, I want to, you know, jump off a cliff and just go crazy, you know, and go fun. With music and those sort of life experiences, I try to paint a painting. Yeah, I try to sort of visually paint a painting with my words. So I want people to read these words and feel them like, oh my God, like that hit me really hard. And so that's how I write. And so I think, you know, it's just underneath this, you know, sort of happy, positive person that I am, when I create, I get to this place where I remember all of these things and all of these sort of times in my life that affected me in a negative way. And I always try to have this sort of positive spin on things that happened to me in my life that just, you know, shaped the person I am today.
Yeah, that's such a great way to look at it. Such a great way to look at it. Well, you're such an inspiration. I just enjoy following you on LinkedIn there so much. And I want you to tell the listeners, where can they find you? I know on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And guys, I'll put all this in the show notes, but where's the best place if people want to talk to you to find
you? Yeah, so of course I'm on LinkedIn. I would say Instagram. You can find me at my last name, Cassavant_writings, WRITINGS. That's where I post a lot of my poetry. That's sort of daily poster, but that's more like once a week I'll post something on there. Then I have just my regular Mike Cassavant Instagram page. I think it's just Mike_Cassavant, and then Facebook, same thing, Mike Cassavant. Those are probably my three main areas you can check me out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming. You just have so many beautiful stories and so inspiring, the things that you've overcome and the way you look at life. It's just,
thank you.
And I know you just help so many people.
Well, I appreciate that, Tracy. You as well. I think you're doing a wonderful thing with this show you have.
Oh, thank you. I love it. I do love it. That's for sure. All right. Well, I'll put Mike's information in the show notes. But that's it for today. We're going to wrap it up. And until I see you next time, you know what to do. Get out there and speak your truth. Just do it beautifully.
Thanks for listening to Captivate the Room with Tracy Goodwin. You can reach out to her at captivatetheroom.com. And be sure to grab The Voice Formula, a free video series that will help you start making a bigger impact with your voice today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes.